Rochelle Sebke is a money coach, but also a friend of mine. So I wanted to have her on this episode to talk all things money, mindset, and how business owners can make better decisions about their money and plan with their money to make their life more curated for themselves. Welcome to the Digital Hive podcast, where we talk all things marketing for creative small businesses. In this episode, we chat about how to make decisions about the resources that we have, how our feelings can change, how we make those moves, and defining what we want to do for ourselves rather than making decisions based on what other people want for us. Enjoy this episode. Welcome to the podcast, Rochelle. It's so good to have you.
Thanks for having me, Emma. I've been waiting to talk to you for a long time.
So tell everyone who you are and all about your business.
I'm Rochelle Sebke, and I'm a money coach for life coaches and other heart-centered, purpose-driven business owners. They tend to be almost accidental business owners in that they're doing something that they love and they feel really called to do, but they probably didn't set out to be a business owner. And they want to work for themselves because they want to do something in the exact way that they want to do it. And that job is not available for them any other way.
That's perfect. I would say too, that one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you about all of this was that piece of like people finding what they want to do, because so much, you know, money is kind of makes the world go around in unfortunate ways. So it's so fundamental to how a business operates. And essentially that is the difference between a hobby and a business. But we all have so many feelings around it. And so it's how can we move through those things and not feel all of that friction? So tell us about your business's mission to build up well-resourced women.
Yes. So my main mission is to help women build up those well-resourced deposits of their time, their money, their energy, and their decision-making skills. And women in particular are socialized to believe that their decisions around their resources are not theirs to make. They need to refer to somebody else. Whether we consciously think that or not, I think we're living in a time in which we're very lucky and very empowered differently than we ever have been throughout history. So we don't think that we rely on men and their resources the way that we used to have to. It just used to be you're not even allowed to have property or a credit card or credit or a bank account without a man's name on it. And we surpassed that time and those limitations. But we're also raised by women who these were realities for them. And so whether we consciously know it or not, we tend to question every decision that we have. And at the end of the day, there are resources. Nobody is ever going to know better than we do what we want our things to do for us. And it's like other people get to choose what they do with their resources. And that's why they're their resources. And I just think it's so hilarious when we really point that out. It's like, yeah, when you're in charge of your time, that's because it's your time. But when it's ours, we feel like, oh, is it okay? We'll hear phrases like, is it crazy? Is it crazy that I want to do this? Maybe I shouldn't have done it that way. I'm sure there is a better way. I'm sure somebody else knows a better way to do it than I do. And so throughout working through this custom program that I work with my clients one-on-one, it's very customized money mentorship. We work through very specific systems. And in working through those systems, we understand here's where my limitations are. Here's where I don't think that this is my decision to make. Here's where I accidentally defer things. And then we can really unpack that.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense to me. And I think too, like how we make decisions is so often based on how we have seen other people do it rather than like sitting down with ourselves and figuring out what we want to do with it and why, which is also sometimes we need that sounding board. Sometimes we need to like talk it out with a person. Sometimes they don't even really need to say too much, but we're kind of just figuring it out with ourselves verbally. Mm-hmm. But that sometimes we just need to get out of our own head and take those things like the imposter syndrome or the concerns that may have happened and sometimes look at it through a reality. And that's why sometimes we need that extra coach, for example. But really, the answers are inside ourselves.
The answers are always inside ourselves. And I know that's really frustrating for people to hear because it's like, then why don't I already know? And there's so many reasons we don't know. And I really want to point out, like, we have not just women, but all of us who are living in society have been socialized to believe that we do not have access to our own internal power. And that is necessary in order for our economic systems to run the way that they do. So it's not accidental. And I think it's really helpful to just know that so we can take some of the pressure and some of the blame off of ourselves and start realizing, like, I mean, even the term imposter syndrome makes it sound like you have done something wrong and that's why you feel like you're a liar. When the reality is, we're questioning ourselves on purpose because it benefits somebody that we question ourselves.
Oh, totally. Oh yeah, that benefiting somebody else piece. That fun nugget. So one of the things also that I really like about how you run your business is that it allows people to make a choice with how they spend their money. And so baked into your business model, you have that part of the revenue that you make goes towards causes that you really feel about. How did you come to that decision?
Such a good question. Thank you for asking that. This really comes back down to my personal finance journey and that we all tend to have natural habits with money. Sometimes we're really good at saving. Sometimes we're really good at spending. Sometimes we're really good at giving. And then it's how do we balance off this three-legged stool so that we're doing it in a way that creates flow and doesn't block off our natural flow of money and prosperity and wealth and other ways that we want to think about money coming in and out of our lives. For me, I was a very natural spender. I learned how to save, and I was not really great about giving. Giving was not really a part of my upbringing when it came to money. Money in my house was talked about, but it was always in a very transactional way. And so I felt inspired by other people's generosity and the way other people gave around me. And I wanted to have more of that in my life. And because I'm building my business on the side of my day job really is my investor in my building of my business. So I wanted to build in sustainable giving as I'm not needing the money that's coming in to support my basic living expenses. Then I'm able to build my business model in a way that I'm giving right off the top. And I would encourage everybody to do that. That 5% maybe that you're setting aside for giving or that 10%, building that in from the beginning, it's like if you can do it on 100%, you can do it on 90%. And it's always easier to do on the lower end of your income when you're starting out and your revenue is lower than getting to your goal revenue and then deciding to give, and then having to find out where do I cut 10% in order to work my way up.
Also, there's so many other things that come into marketing being one of them, but building in those budgets essentially right from the outset for when you're setting your pricing and you're thinking about who your customer is going to be and all of those things, because then they align with those things too. So they align with your marketing because that's how they're going to find you, but they also align with how you like to set up your business and how you, those causes that you are donating to. And maybe you don't, the client might not have that same personal, potentially connection to it from their own personal life, but they also can know about it right off the bat because you've been doing it already. Mm-hmm. Like you've started out with this rather than it just being like a, you know how some businesses have that thing that they say at the end, almost just like a, the cherry on top, but the business isn't really like built around that thing. Mm-hmm. Building in your vocation around A, knowing that you can take the time out from your business, mm-hmm. but also having the finances to do the financial part of the vacation that you want, whether that's travel or something like that. And building those things in rather than getting to a point and then being like, I should be able to take a vacation, but then trying to figure out where the money comes from.
Yes, where the money and the time comes from. So I'm going to bookend that because I do want to come back to vacation, but back to the giving piece. This is something I also help my clients do. We have a specific session that we look at, what do I want my legacy of my business to be? So what is my business not already providing me in my personal life or in my business life that I want to build in? And now we can choose our revenue goals and our operating expenses. What do I want my fixed monthly expenses to be? Based on what is it that I want in my life? What is it that I want my business to do? So I always like to ask the question, like, if you could give to any organization, what matters to you? And how do you, running your business, doing work you love, making money that you want to, like, that you consider to be good money, how do you showing up in that way? How does that make all of the world around you a better, stronger, bolder place?
Oh, totally. Oh, I love that. That's really great. So in talking with you over the years, I've realized that you take quite a holistic approach to money. How did you kind of get to that? Has that always kind of been how you operate? How do you approach money coaching?
I think that's one of the biggest compliments anybody has ever given me when they started calling me like holistic with money. It wasn't something that I set out. It's not a term that I use on my own, and it's not something that I set out for. My parents were really good with practical financial matters, and they taught me very specifically, you know, interest and savings and how to work. But the thing that was short on my understanding about money was that I get to do what I want to do with the money that I have, the money that I create. I really wanted, the whole for me was, I want to be able to do the things I want to do. And I want to enjoy the money that I have. I don't want to just stack up dollars in a bank account and always be telling myself, no, I can't do that. I have to wait until later. It's not responsible. I have to wait until retirement. I can't tell you how many sad stories I've heard of people working jobs that they hate their whole entire life so that they can retire, and then they die like immediately after they retire, and they never get a chance to really enjoy the life that they were setting aside for. So that was really the balance that I think I was missing, and I started building more of that into my life. I was one of those, you know, strange kids that like was listening to Oprah, you know, as a preteen, just really like listening to her talking about how important it was to live in a beautiful home and be surrounded by aesthetics that felt like you. And I started building those ways into my personal life. And it wasn't until, I would say my daughter was leaving high school and moving on to college. So I was in my probably mid-30s. And I was like, what am I going to do with all this time that I've been obsessing about her and her opportunities and my family's growth and balancing the needs of everybody in the household versus what do I want to do with the rest of my life? And I've always been good with money. Every financial advisor and insurance agent I've ever worked with has offered to hire me. And I'm always like, yeah, let's talk about that. What would that look like? And then they tell me that I need to take a certification course. So that would be one point that I would talk about. I'm not a certified financial planner. I'm not a certified tax advisor. I'm not a certified investment advisor. But what I am really good at is understanding the division, holding space for the desire that we get to have the life that we want. And I'm really good at those practical matters of reverse engineering. So we come up with a desire, we set up a plan where we make our decisions once about our money, and then put systems and habits and automations in place. That means that as we go, our money is going directly to the things that we want. And we're waiting for time to pass, but we're not like putting off. And so we're not waiting until we're done to be able to enjoy the life that we want. But we are asking, like, what do I want my life to look and feel like? How do I save the time and the money to do that? But then also, how do I experience my time as I'm waiting for the time to pass so that I have more of those things in my life that I'm looking for at the end?
Yeah, totally. I think too, there's a healthy balance of delayed gratification, and then there's the putting it off and putting it off and putting it off, and eventually it starts to feel like it's never coming to you.
Yeah.
But I also really love that the systems and processes around it, so that it's not like begrudgingly paying that bill every week or month or whatever, it just goes out, and that you can look at your money and be really happy with where people are at and how you are reaching your goals over time. I mean, we all have that balance of impatience in a way, but seeing the progress that people can make over time when they are consciously looking at their money, as well as subconsciously having these things working in the background, and knowing that they are working all of the time. Yeah. So
I think the thing that's most mind-blowing is that when we realize that the only reason we want anything is because of the way we think we will get to feel, or because of the way we think we'll be able to think about ourselves, or the things that we think we'll be able to believe about ourselves when we have the thing. And it's a little mind trippy, right? So, in some ways, money is very concrete. It's like money does have an exchange, and it is a real thing. And at the same time, it is affected by our mindset and the way that we think about things. The way that we experience our life really does matter. And what I'll say about that is, let's say we have a goal of, I want to have, I'm going to throw out one of these sort of imperative numbers. People just like pick randomly, like, oh, I want to have a 10K a month business because I think that that will be the thing that makes me feel successful. But if you're not focusing on feeling successful as you're building up to the 10K a month business, you're not automatically going to feel successful when you have it, if you haven't taught yourself how to practice looking for evidence that you're a successful business owner. And that, you know, again, like building up those building blocks of how do I feel prideful, when we've always been taught our whole life to be humble and to blend in, we're not automatically going to know how to feel pride. So that is helpful to think, okay, what I want to feel when I get this is, I want to feel successful. I want to feel happy. I want to feel proud. How do I start practicing feeling those things as I'm also figuring out ways to increase my revenue to a 10K month?
Yeah. Well, and also a 10K month, I love these arbitrary numbers, because when you look at them in like the full picture, you can make 10K months and not make any profit because the expenses, obviously. So sometimes we have this almost like a throwaway statement that we want to do. Like people want to be visible on social media, but haven't actually defined what that means. And so when people are saying they want this, whatever, like 10K a month, or they want to make six figures or whatever, sometimes, and even with the marketing pieces, they haven't quite sat down and figured out the steps of what that looks like and what that feels like. And so sometimes what can happen is you get to that milestone and it's not what you thought it was going to be. partially because those steps haven't been figured out. And I'm sure you work through all of this with your clients. But I notice it quite a lot with business owners in terms of marketing, of we have this idea of what this thing will get us. And I often like to pause and just take a moment for what does that look like? What does that mean to you? Why is that important to you? So that we can break down a little bit more of an understanding around it so that we can better actually achieve it over time.
Yeah, that's so important. So yes, there's a revenue amount, but then there's a fixed monthly expense amount. What is your burn rate? What is your monthly burn rate? And then what is your true expenses? Things that maybe you don't pay for every month, but they are going to be coming out of your account at some point, sometimes in a big lump sum. And so are we setting aside for our true expenses so that when we are looking at our revenue, we also know here's how much money is coming in the door, but here's how much money is going out the door, and here's how much money I can actually afford to pay myself. Because the thing is, yes, we all want to do the work because we love the work that we're doing. But at the end of the day, the only reason we own a business is to be able to take our pay home and enjoy it in our personal life. So it's why I always start with the personal life, the personal finance, because at the end of the day, that's where the money's going to end up. We're going to do the thing in business and then we're going to take it home. And again, there's fixed monthly expenses on your business end, and then there's fixed monthly expenses on your personal end. And so we want to know both of those numbers.
Yeah. And also those things are so different for everyone. You know, for some people, it's really important that they live on their own or live in a certain part of town, or maybe safety, walking in and out of their home at night or something like that is important to them. For other people, they are fine living in what is essentially a glorified closet in like with five housemates, and they prefer to spend their money, you know, going out or gaming or, you know, anything basically, or on their wardrobe or something like that. And so it's figuring out what are those things that they personally want so that they can make that life that they want, essentially to curate the life that they want.
Yeah. And again, stepping away from what do our parents and the rest of society consider successful for us? You know, so many of us will get caught in owning a home and then not getting the life experience that we want. And at the end of the day, like, how much do we really care that we are a homeowner, and how much is that somebody else's dream for us?
Yeah. Well, and also, what does that home look like? And does that home look a certain way or appear a certain way potentially from the outside because of other people or because of what you truly want? Because everyone has their different feelings of like, would that be security? And then also, is it, do you want to own your own home like with a mortgage, or is the goal the, once you've paid it off, the freehold part?
Yeah,
so it's figuring out all of those different pieces so that all of the emotions along the way are great, because also that can affect, I find, how you then make other decisions in your business. Because if you are tired or feeling tapped out or concerned about something, you are actually going to show up in your marketing and your business differently than if you were, say, like fully feeling set for, you know, you've got a runway of 3 months of expenses covered or any of those kind of things. Like, it's just going to be different for everyone.
Yeah. And I think too, like, really allowing ourselves to want the things that we want helps us line up how we enjoy our time. So for some people, driving a really nice car is really important to them, and they do enjoy it and they get great amounts of pleasure. So it's not about me as a money coach coming through and saying, oh, your percentage of amount of income that you're spending on this car is out of whack and it's crazy and you should do something different. It's really about, why does this matter to you? And then you get to choose that. You know, you can't have everything all at once, but you do get to choose the things that you spend your money on and then balance it out in other ways. And so I love, people will sometimes ask me when they find out I'm a money coach, they'll be like, aren't you afraid you're going to tell somebody to do the wrong thing? I'm like, Yes, if I was telling people what to do, that would be terrifying. But really, the work is in, okay, tell me about you and the things that are really important to you, what lights you up. And then let's look at, like, here's some ways that you could build these habits in so they're happening automatically in the background. And then my number one rule is to never make yourself wrong about anything. And so it's like, I'm going to teach you all the rules that the financial experts have taught me through books and articles and magazines and blogs. And then I'm going to allow you to tell me where you're going to break those rules because they don't fit in with your priorities and your values and your goals. But what's really cool is every time we go through this exercise, it's not that we're taking money out of a category, but we're putting more intention into the category. And so what often will happen, somebody will decide on their own, actually, this is not where I want my resources to go. And then in the process, they end up enjoying their time so much more.
So how can people take that grunt work out of their money? How can they show up more positively with their money?
So there's a couple of things that I find really helpful, and there's some steps to get there. So number one thing that I say is, again, have your desires. Don't make your desires wrong. So allow yourself to want the things that you want, even if they look crazy to everybody else around you. Allow yourself to have the things that you want. Then when we're creating a spending plan, we're really creating the spending plan on purpose with the dollars that we already have. And we're asking ourselves, what do I need these dollars to do for me before more dollars come into my account? And so really budgeting to zero, I use a software called YNAB. It's an acronym. YNAB stands for you need a budget. I use that with my clients for their personal finances and for their business finances. But same concept is, here's how many dollars I have in my account. Here's all the jobs that I need these dollars to be able to cover. And the main thing there is we're accounting for the dollars that we spend monthly, but we're also accounting for the dollars that we're going to spend randomly in various amounts over the course of the year. And sometimes, in order to set up these automations that I really like I love to pay everything automatically. A lot of clients, when they come to me, though, are so busy balancing their accounts that they're afraid to set up something automatic because what if there's not money in their account when it goes through? So sometimes the baseline is, let's get you to a point where you're living on money in your checking account that you made last month. So aging the money between that payday to payday can be really helpful.
Yeah, totally. I remember, I think it was maybe 5, maybe even longer years ago, my bank changed this thing where you could have I can have like 25 accounts under my cash account on my personal end. So I can put aside, you know, rent, hobby budget, like all of these different things. So I can literally visibly see where my money is going and where it is saved. Like all of those can be savings accounts or whatever I want, rather than just seeing a dollar amount and then immediately thinking that's like spending money when it's not. And this particularly helped when I was in a role that was paid monthly. So I only got income once a month, but obviously my expenses were going out weekly or, you know, yearly, depending on, you know, insurance or whatever. That simple change helped me just to see what money I had rather than just like this random arbitrary number that, depending on what time of the month it was, could have meant anything. It wasn't like profit first, but if I wanted it to be profit first wise, I totally could.
Yeah.
But yes, I'm very glad that my bank offers that.
Yeah, that's very helpful. And so the YNAB software does the same sort of thing, but I do think we oftentimes will make our decisions based off of what our bank account balance is. And what we want to do is really sort of shift to knowing, like, what does this bank account balance mean based off of what my monthly expenses that I've already committed to, and the dollar amount and the monthly outgo, what does it actually mean at, like you said, on the 13th that I have this much money? Does it really mean that I can spend anything that I want because there's money in the account? Or are there other like obligations and priorities already spoken for in this money?
Exactly. I think it was maybe 2 or 3 years ago, I had this Excel spreadsheet basically that I had all of my upcoming expenses, but also like retainers and things that I was expecting money to come in based on. And I basically had this little calculation that told me how many weeks of runway I had. And it was really good at showing me that just because, like, if I look at my bank account on the wrong day of the month, it would look like I had nothing and no income potentially, or like it would feel like that because I knew these expenses were coming up. But I could look at that other number and see, no, actually, I'm good for like the next 12, 16 weeks, whatever. And then act accordingly, because I wasn't like, how do I make money today? It was, okay, so what could I put in place today that will help me in that, you know, 16 weeks? And it really helped me to like basically open up my mind to what I could do with my money and all of the different decisions that I could make, mm-hmm. Rather than thinking, but do I have enough money to buy myself a new laptop because my current laptop is breaking? Or do I need to hold out because I don't have all of these other things? And knowing that that money that I had there was totally okay for me to spend on that computer, and that then obviously that had the knock-on effect of I was more productive and all of those kind of things. Yeah. But it gave me that confidence to make that purchase.
Yeah, I think that's really important too, is knowing our numbers can give us confidence to show up in different ways. And so when we're looking at our bank account balance and thinking like, and this happens, I see it all the time too with people who don't know how much they should pay themselves because they don't know how much am I going to need to pay for taxes, how much expenses could come up that I'm going to want to buy in the business, and I don't want to look at the reality of like, oh, my business is not making enough money for me to be able to afford that. So then they just leave all the money in their business checking account until they absolutely have to withdraw something because they're not going to be able to afford something in their personal life. And what ends up happening is they're telling themselves a story that their business is not successful and they're working so hard and they're not paying themselves and they're not able to pay themselves, when really they're able to pay themselves. They're just unaware of how much to do. And so I really love that you had that figured out of like, how can I see how long this money is going to last me? Like, what a cool spreadsheet. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it was very handy. So with that budgeting and with people making those decisions, you know, maybe it's a personal decision of can I afford to buy a house, or can I afford to go on this trip? Or maybe it's a business decision of do I invest in tech or marketing or outsourcing to a virtual assistant or something. How can people know when they can actually afford something?
Yeah, so I think that, again, we're asking the question, what do I want my life or my business to look and feel like? So what are the things that I am envisioning that I'm going to get to think and feel about myself if I have the new computer, if I have the VA? And then from there, we're looking at, here's the revenue that's coming in on a regular basis. And oftentimes it's not going to be consistent. And so we want to track over the past 6 to 12 months, so that we know as money comes in, some months is high, some months is low, how do we average that out so that we understand what our monthly take in is and what our fixed monthly expenses are, and then our true expenses. And then from there, now we know what the dollar amount is left over. So I also like to point out the other side of the equation, which is the much more fun equation, which is, okay, I'm short this much. Now, do I want to just tell myself no and take my desire off of the table? Or is this a place for me to now create a new revenue goal and maybe a new project that feels fun and exciting and enticing and helps me feel the way that I want to feel? Those are my two. Like, I always like to, again, I'm going to go back to my rule number one is never make yourself wrong for anything, including the things that you want. So I like to think of the decision of, can I afford to do this, as a flow chart. We're just looking at all of the ways of like, okay, if not yet, then when, right? Like, what do we need to do then to get to ourselves a yes?
Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah, because it's the thing of, okay, even if you can't afford it right this moment, what can you do to make that a possibility in the near future? Not like, oh, the one day, you know, like 10 years in the future, when I retire kind of discussions, but like, how could I make this happen now? Or part of that, like, how could I, you know, maybe you have a life goal of like traveling the world, but like, how can you start that now? Or how can you work towards that? Or how can you look around your hometown or whatever, so that you still get those same like feelings, mm-hmm, without it being ticking that thing off your bucket list?
Yeah. I wrote this great article a few years ago for SaaS Magazine, and it was talking about, it's not the bucket list travel is not about the destination, the place that you're going. It's really about the way that you want to feel while you're on that trip. So identifying what those things are. And then again, we're looking at your budget. Can you afford to do the thing that you have as your bucket list travel? If yes, let's start setting aside the money and making the plan to do it. Or if no, okay, what can I do this year that is within my budget as I'm still keeping my eye on, like, in the future, I want to do this. And then we get to experience it along the way. And we also get to build in like more of that into the life that we're going to be building for ourselves. So the thing about, like, what am I learning about myself as I do the local travel that is going to make that trip that much better in the future? And like, what are the connections I could be building now? So like, maybe you get to learn a language before you take that trip because you're setting that time aside and you're really clear about what am I imagining this trip is going to look like. If you're imagining in your head that you're speaking fluently the language, like, that's an important thing to know because you can build that into your daily life. So you get to actually experience more of that. I like to think of as expanding out the experience, right? So like, how do we enjoy and take just as much pleasure in the planning of the trip as the actual execution of the trip and in the memories of looking back at what we did on this trip?
Yeah, exactly. We, as a family, are planning this trip at the end of the year. It's booked now, but we are going on this trip where we are walking this track. It has been a long time since I've been on a tramp, and every time I get blisters. So there's all of those kind of things. And then there's the training and the working towards the thing. This is very much a type 2 fun holiday because I will very much enjoy the tramp. But while I am walking, if I get blisters, especially on the third day, which is mostly downhill, I will be, you know, in my head about the pain. Mm-hmm. So there's those things along the way of like training for the thing that I want to achieve. Like, even if it was I wanted to run a 5K, that would never be my goal. But if I wanted that to be my goal, it would be like, okay, well, then I need to start running and doing all of these things. And maybe I set a time limit on it, but I work my way towards that. And there are many things that you can do to improve that goal and help you get to that goal that aren't just going out for a run. You can do other things like, you know, obviously stretching, working on things so you don't get injuries. There's some gear that you might want for a longer run, maybe don't need it for a 5K, but all of those kind of things along the way. And there's a mindset piece in that. So it's figuring out all of those things rather than just like, can I afford to like enter that 5K or whatever. It's what are all of the other pieces and what do I want that to look like when I do it?
I love that you chose the 5K. I also do not run. Like, if I am running, something is wrong. You need to leave the area, whatever is happening. But I did do a 5K training at one time, that couch to 5K. And I learned so much about myself. But yeah, like looking at your example of blisters, there's like this very practical aspect of like, okay, what can I do about blisters? What can I do to prevent blisters? What can I do when the blister arrives? So that's the way that I coach around money too. Like there's some very practical things like setting up accounts and setting up calculations and setting up spreadsheets. And those things I actually do in session on the call with my clients because they're business owners who have a whole other life that they are doing. They don't want to work with somebody, pay for a result, and then also have that homework that they find so frustrating and so cantankerous that they don't want to do it on their own, right? They haven't done it on their own yet because it feels like a big hurdle. And so I'm very much this way with tech. I can figure out how to do some tech things. I work at an engineering company as my day job, but I don't want to, right? And so, so those practical things of like, what can you do on that practical level? And then there's the mindset things that you can do like, okay, when I get a blister, how do I want to think and feel about this blister? How can I somatically bring myself back into the present moment of smelling and sights and sounds that take away from the focus of the blister as it rubs against your skin or your sock or your shoe, right? And so those things also, they're important and they layer on. And so as you were asking earlier about like, how do you take this holistic approach? It's really over time noticing what has been helpful. It's like layering things on. The reason my system is so good and works so well for everybody is because I've used it in my life over and over in different scenarios. And because I'm not prescriptive about it. It's not, this is the one way you should do it. This is the way I've done it. And so this is the only way you should do it. It's really, tell me what's really important to you. Here's some practical things we can put in place. Oh, you don't like that? That's not going to work for you. How would it work for you? And then building that system in. And so I love that the idea of the blister is both practical and mindset. And there's things that we can do to prepare. There's things that we can do in the moment. And then there's things that we can do after the moment when it's already happened. How do we want to handle that?
Yeah. And also along the way, there will be things that we didn't expect. Like maybe we thought something was going to make us feel really great, but it doesn't. We can always review that and make adjustments and try again better next time. But it doesn't have to be like, I was so silly to make that decision and that's all my fault. Like it's just, you didn't know something. You thought it was going to be this way. You hadn't experienced that yet. And now that you have, you can make a different decision.
I'm really glad that you brought that point up because it's something that is so built into the work that I do that I almost don't think about it anymore. But really, when we're looking at relationship with money, we're looking at the relationship that we have with ourselves. And that is not something that we are taught how to do. We are not taught how to have a relationship with ourselves or how to think well of ourselves. Mostly it's like, here's all the ways that you're not good enough and do better. These are all the messages that we're getting from everybody, not because the people around us are bad people, but because these are the messages that they got on how they should be productive. And the relationship with self and the one concept that I find myself teaching over and over again that I learned in relationship coaching, but like relationship to myself, but also relationship to other people is what is my capacity for disappointment? And when my Somatica coach taught me that I had an option to stay connected through disappointment, I was like, I just totally felt like she was speaking a different language. I was like, I have only ever experience disappointment, meaning I need to disconnect. And like, here's a great example. You have an argument with your friend or your spouse or your romantic partner. The only thing that we ever really see is like, I've had an argument and now we're going to split ways, right? I'm going to leave the room. I'm going to have a reaction. I'm going to like point out all the ways that you're not making me feel good, and I want you to do something differently so that I can feel better. When I really understood, I can feel disappointment and it's a moment in time, and I can support my physical sensations during that, and I don't have to fix it with my head. Like, I don't have to go do something in order to comfort myself. It's really been beneficial in the way that I see myself. And when I see myself in a place of comfort and compassion, then I can continue to goal set, and I can continue to go out there and try to do something that I'm like working on, instead of I'm disappointed, this doesn't feel good, and so this means that it's not for me and I've done it wrong and I should just stop.
And also just the thing of, just because you haven't been good at something before or done something well before or been happy with your decisions about something before, like, it doesn't mean you can't try it again, either that exact thing again or the same thing but different. And so therefore, like, if you were concerned about making certain money decisions or marketing decisions, it doesn't necessarily mean that you can't make a better, more informed decision now, because of course you can. You've experienced that thing differently now, so you'll make an adjustment. And it doesn't mean you'll make the perfect decision the second time around. It might take a few different rounds, but cutting yourself some slack and then also giving yourself the time and space to feel those feelings, so that you can make that better decision, basically.
Yeah. And how do I want to feel when I am disappointed? How do I want to treat myself when I'm disappointed? We all know how we would talk to our friend or our daughter or our sons, right? Or our partners when they were experiencing disappointment. And it's not the way we talk to ourselves, you know? Mm-mm. And so how do we like really practice being that friend to ourselves? I think there's a lot of discussion about self-acceptance and self-love. And I think sometimes that feels like such a wild leap off of a canyon because we have never experienced that. So sometimes it's easier to take a step back and ask, like, how could I be a little bit more friendly to myself in this scenario?
Is there different ways that people can challenge themselves with their money, challenge themselves? Like, I love the concept of, like, I look at my house and I'm like, I have all of these things that I don't use. Let me use them up and kind of go on like almost like a spending ban. Are there ways that people can look at their money and do that kind of like refresh, whether there's part of your process that you work through with them, but essentially have like a reset moment?
This is such a good question. I'm actually really curious about your process there. It sounds like you have found ways to turn it into a game for you. Is that how you would describe it?
Yeah. Essentially, I accumulate all of the things, whether it's like ideas or literal like beauty products or whatever. And then I don't really get around to using them. Like, I don't get around to implementing the ideas, or I don't get into implementing the stuff. So I kind of just have like a stop and I'm like, no new ideas. I have to execute all of the old ideas, or I'm not allowed to buy any of these new things until I use up the stuff, or challenging myself to this week use things that are already in my pantry instead of buying stuff, because eventually that food's going to go off. But it's always very short term. Like, it's not like I'm not going to spend any money for the rest of the year, because I would have many feelings about that. Mm-hmm. I feel like I would break that in the worst way possible. Like, I would rebel in a funny way. But that having the little challenge of, can I only spend on my normal stuff, or can I not spend on this thing, or can I challenge myself to not do that thing? Like, even like, can I avoid sugar for 30 days or whatever?
Yeah.
Rather than thinking like, I need to be perfect for the rest of my life. It's more, how can I do this thing for this very finite amount of time?
Yeah, I really like the way that you describe that, because you know that you would be rebellious if you said no spending for a long period of time. So it's like you have gotten to know what your patterns are and you work within those. The additional step that I would add in there is, does this feel expansive or contractive to me? So if it feels like inspiring and your chest sort of like opens up and it feels like light and airy when you think about like, ooh, I'm not going to spend anything on beauty products until I've used all these beauty products, or I'm not going to have any new ideas until I've implemented these. If you feel like light and airy when you do that, then keep doing it. If you feel like downtrodden and constricted, and it feels like you're blocking off the flow of new ideas, the other thing could be just to release those things. So I also have done the thing where I have a lot of beauty products and ideas. I actually find it just as freeing for me to just give the beauty products away. Yes, they cost money, but they're not in my face anymore telling me you cost money and you didn't spend me, right? And same with the ideas is like, hey, you had this idea and you didn't use it. At the beginning of the year, I was having a really hard time getting motivated to do anything. I live in the Midwest in the US and is a great time to hibernate. It's not really a great time to like implement ideas, right? Because I'm solar powered. And so if there's not a lot of sunshine, I probably don't have a lot of energy. Anyway, I was having a really hard time getting motivated and my inbox was full of old emails and old ideas I hadn't got to. My desk drawers were full of old notes that I hadn't implemented. And so it took me probably 6 weeks. I was really like dredging through things. And then I just one day opened all of my drawers and took all of the stuff out and put it in a box. And then I just packed in the things that I was expecting to utilize in the next few weeks. And so releasing those old ideas, releasing those old things that you haven't used can be just as beneficial. We don't have to force ourselves to use something just because we had the idea or we spent energy on them before.
Exactly. And there's always that flip of if I'm doing less of X, I'm doing more of Y. Because if I'm not cooking this week, then I'm obviously doing something else with that time. So there's also the flip of I'm not spending time formulating these new ideas, but I am spending time executing them. So it's like plenty of those ideas get tossed in that period of, okay, well, this one I didn't execute because it wasn't actually a very good idea, or I still need to work on this for later. Same as all the stuff, like a certain amount of the beauty products will have been opened for too long. They just need to go, or I'm just not going to use them, or I don't like the way they make my hair look, or whatever. It's kind of just like that casting off old things that no longer suit you.
Yeah. And also, you know, when you come across the idea where it's like, yeah, it's not time to execute this one yet, how can we still honor it and put it in a place of importance and not beat ourselves up along the way that we're not there yet?
Mm.
So good.
And I think too, especially if like my reaction in some of those instances would be to spend money on certain things or eat certain foods or whatever. And so it's like, but I know that that secondary round of things that I will do and emotions I will feel also won't feel great. So how can I work on those other things? Because ultimately with the whole holistic piece, the money that I spend while avoiding the thing is also not great for what I wanted to do. So having those feelings and just like forgiving myself.
Yeah, I love that too, especially with the beauty product example, because I can totally see somebody being like, oh, what I need to do now is go to the container store and buy hundreds of dollars worth of containers to organize these products that I haven't used yet so that I can feel that I'm organized and I'm using all of these beauty products, which is fine if you love beauty products and it's what you really want to do. But if it's a shade of lipstick that you are just never going to wear again because you do not like the way it lights up your hair or your complexion on your face, like be okay with giving it to your niece to play with or, you know.
Exactly.
Some other, again, it could go in the bin. There's like all kinds of things that we could do. And so you're right. This is a holistic piece. And so the question that you were asking me, like what types of things can we do? I love to make games out of solutions, right? So here's a problem I'm having. Asking my clients often, or them asking themselves, if you're not working with a coach, you can always ask yourself, like, how could this be just as true, but told in a different way? So for instance, I'm going to use an example of, so I'm working towards being a full-time money coach and being full-time in my business. And the narrative in the story that I have is that the only way I've ever been able to make money consistently is by working for somebody else. So this is my belief. This is my identity. This is who I believe I am. I believe that I'm safer as an employee than I am as a business owner, because I haven't experienced that before. And so asking myself the question, like, how, like, what's another story that is just as true that actually puts me in the direction that I want to move? And that could be, actually, every year I've made more money than I, you know, every year I can trust myself that I will make more money than I did the year before. And I can do that by looking back at my historical progression over time. And if that story doesn't happen to be true, right? Like, maybe you took some time off for maternity leave, or maybe you left a job that was like not good for your mental health and your space, or you just didn't enjoy the people that you were working with or the expectations. Really understanding, like, I left that job because it wasn't in alignment with the life that I wanted to live. And so I can trust myself to create the life that I want, even if some of the metrics dip below what my expectations were. But I can trust myself that I am moving in that direction, even when bad things happen. I think that the biggest line of bull that anybody has ever taught us is that there is one thing that could happen that would destroy us so much, it would take us completely out of being able to do the thing that we want to do. And it's the number one story that we're all taught. Everybody is like, oh my gosh, if you make one wrong move, your life could be over. It's just not true.
No. Not even slightly. No, I love that. So tell everyone where they can find you.
You can find me at RochelleSiebke.com is my website. I would love for you to go and subscribe to my newsletter, because you will get the fun money guide. So again, I believe that you all have enough rules. No, you don't need any more rules. What you could use is to have more fun with your money and not make yourself wrong about money as often as you maybe do right now or have in the past. And the Fun Money Guide is going to be a list of habits and routines that feel like nurturing self-care you can build in and layer up over time. It also has a money playlist, which is a really great thing to listen to while you're doing your financial tasks, as well as some podcasts. Every interview that I've ever done is on a very curated list in there, as well as some other podcast episodes that I think are just really good money references and resources. And then email me. I'm best on one-on-one connections. So Rochelle@RochelleSiebke.com. You can follow me on Instagram at RochelleSiebke.moneycoach. Please do reach out to me. I'm very personable and really good at one-on-one situations. So if anything in this conversation sparked any bit of interest for you, reach out to me. I would love to talk to you individually.
That's amazing. Well, thank you so much for joining me. This conversation was so inspiring and just really insightful, I'm sure, for everyone who was listening, but also definitely for me.
Thank you, Emma. Thank you for the work that you're doing with this podcast. I think it's so important to highlight all the different ways that we do marketing, and just to be completely transparent. When you reach out to me, I was like, I don't know, I really have a lot of imposter syndrome about the way I market, because I just sort of do it like Nelly, like willy-nilly. What I think that you do so well is highlight all of the different ways that marketing can be done, and also like show us, here's some ways that you could do it really practically. And also, it's okay if you're not doing them in the way that everybody else is doing them. And here's some examples of people who are doing them differently. So I really appreciate the work that you do.
Well, exactly. And then also, well, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. But also that just because the marketing that you really find interesting and that engages with different brands doesn't mean that you have to market like that. So there's also that option.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you for joining me for this episode of the Digital Hive podcast. I hope you found this episode inspiring and that it helps you to think a little bit more positively about your money. If you're enjoying the podcast, I'd truly appreciate it if you tagged me on Instagram at Honeypot Digital or shared it with a friend. To find out more about Honeypot Digital and the strategy and coaching work that I do, or to find more marketing resources, head to honeypotdigital.com.